some of your comments here. Hi, Greg. Why does Ukraine not defend itself the same way as Israel? It can't. It doesn't have the weaponry Israel has. Since LUH became a university hospital, it went downhill fast because it's now a training hospital with young nurses, doctors, all trainees with very few qualified. Maybe we should change it back to a general hospital. I'm not really quite sure what the situation is there. Good morning, Greg. When have schools ever closed down because of influenza? People like Mr. Breslin, who have that listener asking for something as silly as closing a school because of flu, think that listener needs to lay off the boosters. There's a particular school where quite a number of young children have become quite ill with influenza AIDS spread within the school. A number of them have ended up in hospital. And a concerned parent wants to know if it's safe to send their child to school because it remains open. What's that got to do with boosters? That's a concerned parent who's looking for advice from a medical professional. I don't think it's an unfair question. They've been told that that's not policy. It can happen. This is influenza A, which is highly transmissible and leaves young people, as I say, hospitalised. If that's okay with you, that's fine. I was in Letterkenny yesterday when leaving via the Neil T. Blaney Road around 3:30. It took 25 minutes when we had the green light. The roundabout was blocked. I travelled the same route at the same day and time 2 weeks ago. No hassle. Hi, please share with your listeners. It's a warning to parents. So listen up to this. We haven't been able to verify this, but have verified it enough that we're happy enough to read it out. My 12-year-old was walking home from school on his own today. That was Wednesday at 4:45 p.m. He was at Hillcrest Nursing Home on Long Lane when a purple-blue Jeep stopped with him, opened the passenger door and asked him to give him something he had dropped. He ignored him and walked on. The man had sunglasses on, had a bald head and an English accent. When he told me, he was all in a fluster, but even he said, how could you just drop something from a car? Also said he turned in by Fairgreen. So if anyone else has heard of any potentially suspicious approaches in or around that area, please let us know. Roundabout at Mount Errigal is a disaster. From the Glenties area going to Derry for an appointment, the engineer has a lot to answer for and he's come on air to explain. Look at Sligo and how the lights work there. A caller says, earlier in the year, Rena Donaghy promised an ambulance for Buncrana in September. No sign of it. Is there an update? Well, we'll seek an update. And on it goes. We'll come back to more of those in a moment. Right, the EPA has called on Irish Water / Uisce Éireann to provide clear plans to prevent pollution at some of Ireland's most important water bodies. Its latest urban wastewater treatment report, the agency says less than half of wastewater here is treated to European standards, with huge issues recorded in Dublin and Cork. And I presume in a remarkable coincidence, Uisce Éireann yesterday released a press release in relation to the great progress they're making in terms of wastewater treatment. Halfway through this year in Donegal, there were seven areas recorded discharging raw sewage because their public sewers were not connected to treatment plants. Those places are Burtonport, Coolatee, Falkara, Kerrykeel, Mavill, Remelton and Rathmullen. Now we know Mavill, Remelton and Rathmullen are coupled in a potential scheme down the line. David Shannon is an EPA inspector. He joins us now. Hi, David. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Right. How concerned are the EPA in relation to the plans, as much as you have them, from Uisce Éireann to address these issues?
Well, just to give you the overall picture here, now the EPA launched their annual report today on urban wastewater treatment, and we're finding that while there has been some improvements, there are still significant concerns. You know, we've got 26 areas across the country that are still discharging raw sewage. Now, this is down from 32 last year, so it's moving in the right direction, and Uisce Éireann is committed to resolving most of these by 2025, areas like Remelton and Rathmullen. There's also 15 large towns and cities that are failing to meet European Union standards that were set to protect the environment. And collectively, these generate over half of all Ireland's wastewater, most of this coming from the treatment plant at Ringsend in Dublin. Now, there is plans to upgrade that plant, and that should be completed in 2025. So again, there is some improvements there. The EPA's big concern, I think, is that Ishgairn still doesn't have clear plans to prevent pollution at some of the most significantly impacted water bodies, you know, areas like Bridge End and Burnfoot. And so what the EPA is calling for is Ishgairn to use its next investment plan, which will go from 2025 to 2029, to carry out the improvements needed at these areas. And we are seeing some improvements, like this time last year, we had 8 areas discharged in raw sewage in Donegal. Kilcar was connected a while ago, and very recently, since the report was actually first written, Kerrykeel has been connected, and we're expecting Burton Port to get treatment before the end of the year. So there is some improvement, but not at a fast enough pace, really.
Now, obviously, there are big-scale projects, which you mentioned, a 2029 a target. But in terms of some of this, the smaller projects that have that 2025 timeframe, are you looking for Ishgairn to speed that up or to make sure they stick to those targets?
I think it's a case of where Ishgairn has plans in place. So, say, Remelton and Rathmullen, the examples. What we need to see is that they deliver those targets on time. You know, they have to go through a lot of statutory process to get a work to construction, and we need them to stick to those targets. The areas we're concerned about are some of the ones where wastewater is causing pollution to rivers. You know, areas like Kilmacrenan and Bridge End, and where Ishgairn has taken too long, really, to deliver the works needed at those areas. In fact, we were so concerned about Kilmacrenan that the EPA took a prosecution earlier this year to try and speed things up, and it is moving along now. So work is expected to start in Kilmacrenan in 2024 and be completed in 2026. So what we'd be calling for is Ishgairn to stick to these deadlines and meet them.
Okay, listen, thank you very much for your time, David. That's David Shannon, EPA Inspector. Okay, time for more of your comments here as we head towards a break. With regards to phones in the classroom, we weren't even allowed calculators. Yeah, that's what that's kind of the one element of it. And I was hoping someone maybe involved in the education system might be able to educate me. Why do we need legislation to keep phones out of classrooms? What's going on? Is it that the kids won't listen? I don't know. Anyone can give me an insight into it. It's probably a really simple answer. Because as I say, I remember there was one fellow in class when I was in national school and he had a calculator watch and it was like, you can't wear that to school anymore. He wasn't actually allowed to wear the calculator. You know, remember the old watches, they had a calculator on? Not sure if there were any use. But that wasn't allowed at school. It wasn't that it wasn't allowed in the classroom. It wasn't allowed at school. And yet we're talking about the Education Minister introducing legislation to ban phones from classrooms. So, again, could someone fill in the blanks? Because I'm old, right? And I don't understand where we had this slippage where you weren't allowed at any time of the year, by the way, not just exams, to wear a calculator watch. And now we're talking about people have not being allowed to take mini computers and communication devices into the classroom with me. If someone can sort of fill in that gap as to what's changed or why it requires legislation, I genuinely would be really appreciative of it. Hi, Greg. I was at the county final last Sunday. It was a great day out. The only downside is when you went to the toilet, there was no water in the taps to wash your hands. Every tap in the toilets were not working. I think this is a disgrace in the present day. Okay, wasn't aware of that. Hi, Greg. I live beside Joe. They're a great family. Absolutely heartbreaking to see the family home gone and them all in the mobile home. It's just a simple failure by government to all these families in that position. And indeed, we spoke to Joe and family and got an insight into how this is affecting the younger members of that family as well, just as that house was being tossed. If you bought a house and got the architect out to examine it and he passed it as sound and then you found out later it is mica, can you follow the architect? I presume you're talking about a visual inspection. And even now, to get onto the scheme, you might get an architect or an engineer out. They will only give a visual inspection, and they can give a point of view as to whether or not the house has defective concrete or not. And then you can forward that on to the council, try and get on the scheme if they say they suspect it has, and then get your house bore tested. In terms of a visual inspection, if there was nothing visually to indicate at that time to the architect that it didn't have defective concrete, I'm not sure really what liability they might have in that regard. Now, if they bored it, sent the samples away and it came back and they said you're okay and then it turned out, that would be a bigger issue. In terms of, I don't mean it's a huge issue if your house has got defective concrete. You know what I mean, don't you? Back to the roads. Greg, he hasn't got a clue what's going on in the ground. Another, the Oakfield roundabout is another traffic disaster. Needs lights there too. It's a free-for-all when we have taxis parked on the Tesco roundabout also. Another disappointed that they say they can manually fix it, but they are not willing to. I think they have to trust the technology on this because it's clearly learning software. And if they interfere with it, it doesn't learn it correctly for the long haul. Re-roads, Eamon Ryan's going to be delighted with Letterkenny because people are going to abandon their cars because it's quicker to walk. Oh yeah, remember someone mentioned about pollution in Letterkenny and had it increased because of the traffic? It hasn't actually. There was 2 days this month where, and it's amazing how you can see the spikes. There was two days this month where SPO peaked twice into the red zone where it was dangerous, and both was around about the time people were getting home and lighting their fires. It was after rush hour and everything. And I checked the temp on those 2 days and there were two cold days. So it's amazing. We're all the same, aren't we? We go home, we light the fire, and I suppose in an urban area it affects. So obviously there are quite a few people still around Letterkenny not that are using dirty coal in inverted commas because it has to be that. It couldn't be anything else. Traffic is past Leck Graveyard every morning. Now we need a third bridge. Christmas is going to be a disaster, they say. I recall many years ago talking to a friend who worked as an EU bureaucrat in Brussels. When I mentioned that Letterkenny was the worst planned town in Ireland, he replied, "No, it's not. It's the worst planned town in Europe." Over a decade later, it seems nothing has changed. Letterkenny was for a long time the fastest growing town in Europe. Unfortunately, the infrastructure didn't really keep pace with that growth, it seems. "Hi, Greg. Tell Damien Letterkenny's a complete disaster. They have destroyed the town with traffic lights. The amount of people that's staying out of the town is unbelievable. Businesses should be worried, Greg." But a few businesses have commented on posts on social media that I've put out there to sort of get a sense of what's going on. And outside of one business, I haven't really seen any criticism of the traffic in Letterkenny from any other businesses. Now, that doesn't mean it hasn't happened. It just means I haven't seen it. But I can only think of one business that has actively said, "Look, this is really bad for the area." A couple of others have said, "It's early days, let's wait and see." So I'm not sure if the business community is crying out. I haven't heard them. "A massive problem with Letterkenny traffic is the roundabout on the Remelton Road near Arena 7. Traffic is backed up to the golf club at peak times. Once you get past this roundabout, the rest of the journey isn't too bad. The fact that it is regulated means you know you will get through in a reasonable time. It took me 15 minutes from Arena 7 to the Polestar at peak time, which is a good improvement. But at Bank Holiday weekend, we'll decide how good or bad the new system is." Well, I won't, be honest with you. I'm going to have to rely on you guys to tell me because my time is precious. And of course, that area that you're talking about, people also turn right thinking they're being clever up past Alcorns, scoot around and come down and meet you at that roundabout. So that means there's extra traffic on 1, 2, 3 roundabouts. Crazy stuff. "Hi, Greg, can you ask the people of Donegal what they think of the parish priest and the GEA club giving a reference to a person caught with drugs?" Well, what is your views on people being given what's the word? Reference? It's not references. Is it references? I don't know what it's called. But you know, priests or GA clubs or whatever vouching for people. You see, it's very possible for people to lose their way a little as well, you know, or make poor decisions. I don't think we want to constantly write people off, do we, if they make a mistake? We have to allow people the opportunity to rehabilitate or to change their ways or learn the error of their ways. And perhaps maybe if a club or a priest or whatever it is sort of saying, "Look, at what that person did is horribly wrong and they probably deserve some punishment, but overall they're not a bad person." Is that wrong? Is that bad? Should it be banned only in certain cases? Let me know what you think. Have you thought about that much? 086 60 25,000. Re-phones in classes. Students are already a step ahead. They're using smartphones when told to put their phones away. Smart watches, is it that you mean? Because, of course, you can have your phone away and you can keep going on your watch. "I absolutely hate the reliance of mobile phones at schools. My son is in first year and he is reliant on his phone. He can't simply write his homework in a homework diary and bring the phone home. He has to check everything on the phone. Times he doesn't understand or can't find the assigned homework. More pen and paper. And why are we paying hundreds for books they're barely using? I think even schools with iPads in, you still have to buy the book. So the book sits there and it's not used, and you have the iPad. If I'm not mistaken, I think, now correct me if I'm wrong, but you still have to buy the books. They might not be used, but you buy the book and then you get the e-version as well, which seems a wee bit strange. Sorry for all the reading, but as I say, so many of you have texted in, and I think it's really important that we make sure that once we invite you to text, we read them out. So more on traffic coming in thick and fast. I'll go to John before we take the break. Hey, John.
How's it going, Greg? How are you?
I'm all right. Good, John. We're talking about phones in schools. What's your take, or what's your situation?
Well, the school now that my sons and daughters go to there, and the teachers now never have the phones in their hands, because I've been in the school a few times myself. And, you know, they kind of be one rule for the teachers and then a rule for the kids, you know?
Monkey see, monkey do.
Yeah, very much so.
Right, so if we're going to ban them from the students, let's have a look at the teachers first.
Yeah. Well, see, the teachers can't be giving them work to do and then going on their phones.
Really?
And,
does that go? Well, that's bad management, isn't it? That shouldn't be allowed to happen.
Well, it's happening, you know, and the kids is picking up on that, you see, and they're seeing this. And I suppose they have a point too, like, you know.
Yeah, I presume it happens, but the idea that the teacher, whilst the students have been given some work, would be sitting on their phone seems, you know, doesn't seem right to me anyway.
I don't know, do they need them for the work, or they're giving out to the kids or what, but I know there's Google Classroom and stuff like that, you know, the kids use their phone for, you know, the schools have integrated the phones with, you know, with school, you know, for these reasons, and kind of over COVID, it's become a big thing.
But as well as that too, socially, you're like every parent, John, I'm sure, you're under pressure for the children to have their mobile phones and access to them. Yeah. If the teachers were on board as well, would you like to see phones banned from schools? Or do you think they're important for them to have with them?
Well, you have to look at it with kids with additional needs too.
Yeah.
There's kids there with additional needs, you know, and they have sensory issues, and you know, they need their phones to regulate, self-regulate and their stuff on their phones. You can see that kind of view of it too, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right, okay.
Which,
well, John, in fairness,
you couldn't totally ban them. I don't think, you know, now the way things are and the way things have progressed with technology, and as I said, kids with additional needs with, you know, like dyslexia and dysgraphia and different things they get,
mm-hmm.
you know, the phones are vital for them too.
Yeah.
And laptops.
Yeah, okay. All right, listen, John, thanks for your insight. Really appreciate it. Maria, are you there?
I am, yes, Greg. How are you?
Not too bad. Right, what do you think about phones in schools?
I agree that they should be banned. I just think with the whole bullying on social media at the minute, and kids are just addicted to the phones, they cannot leave the phones out of their hands at all. Mm-hmm. So I think, and they're kids are taking photos of teachers and other pupils and putting them up on Snapchat.
Right. And most times we don't see them either, do we, if the truth be told? We don't see most of probably what's going on social media.
Exactly.
Because we're not. They have the public one that they allow us on, right? And then they have the friends-only one where everything else goes on. And to try and get onto that, well, you'd be trying to get money out of them would be easier. So they have ways around these things. And also to Marie, it's difficult, isn't it, if one student has a phone, well, then they're coming back saying, well, they have a phone. Why can't I have a phone in school? It has to be kind of a blanket ban for it to work, I think. Now, obviously, as John said, if technology is required for certain students with additional needs, of course, I don't think anyone would want that restricted, but the general use of phones, you would love to see an all-out ban. But why, Marie, do we need legislation for it? Can principals not say no phones in the classroom?
Well, I think a lot of principals probably don't want to do that, because then there'll be a backlash from pupils and parents, probably.
So they need the legislation to back them up to make those decisions. So they may want to, but they don't want to be an outlier and have the backlash. That's a really good point. Never thought about that.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Did you have a phone in school, Marie?
I didn't. No. I was mobile phones were, I'm too old really for, for, they were just coming in at that stage. Right. But yeah, they weren't. Yeah, they were just coming in when I was last year or two at school.
Okay.
But yeah. So it wasn't, I'm too old. Yeah.
All right then. Thanks, Marie. Lovely to chat to you.
Okay, perfect. And you too, Greg.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
I'm that old. We used to play with a stick and a wheel, just running around the play yard, banging the top of that stick as it went around. What did you do to entertain yourselves at school compared to now? First and second, national and secondary school. It was a simpler time. It really, really was. I feel lucky that I was at school when I was at school, because it was tough enough with, you know, if you were a little bit different or what have you, in terms of, you know, not being included or whatever it might be. I can only imagine how it must be when it's amplified and it's all the time. And maybe, you know, I've heard cases of students who say they went to the bathroom and they went differently, like they stood with their trousers lower down than you might, say they didn't use a zip, and pictures of stuff like that being taken and spread around. I've heard about cases that recently. If those phones weren't in the school, that wouldn't be allowed to happen. And you can only imagine the impact that has on the child and their family as well. So we have to do all we can to protect our young ones, don't we? Because we often talk about, and I get it and I agree, you know, we often talk about the things that might be coming in terms of, you know, sex ed or the dangers of, you know, foreign people coming into Ireland and the danger it might pose to children. And I get that, right? But I just wish we'd pay more attention on the stuff now. Like, let's get angry and protest and get T-shirts printed up about the stuff now, the stuff that we're in control of. You know, I think sometimes it's easier to talk about the threat of something than actually deal with what's going on the ground right now. And hi, Sinead. Good morning to you.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good, Sinead. Your daughter's good, an SNA, and we're talking about sort of, you know, technology and mobile phone devices in schools. What have you learned from her?
Yeah, well, my daughter has an SNA.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Sorry, I misread that.
Has access to an SNA. She's a physical need.
Understood.
Yes, so she is in first year. And obviously we had a transition meeting with the school prior to her starting. And I had asked if it was possible for her to have a pager, mm-hmm. as opposed, you know, to having somebody sitting on her shoulder the whole time that could be best used with another child with different needs, you know, because I did anticipate that the needs wouldn't be constant. They mm-hmm. might just be, you know, every so often. But I was told by the school that the handiest way to deal with it is actually to use the mobile phone,
right.
To contact if there was a need. And as a parent, I didn't really want that, mm-hmm. because you try to do everything you can to discourage the child from having a phone in school.
Yeah.
Now, I 100% get where the school are coming from, and the school's a phenomenal school, phenomenal, and I really mean that. And they are the best advocates for every single one of their students. But I suppose it's difficult for them too, in that it's just so commonplace now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You know? And Sinead, sorry, what would be an example? So your daughter would be in class, might feel they need a bit of assistance. Do they text the SNA or call them, or what's the interaction with the phone?
Well, the way is now, thank God, touch wood, you know, there hasn't been a need okay. for the SNA so far, you know, that it would be just in extreme circumstances. Mm-hmm. But, you know, where she would take ill suddenly, or, you know, she's liable to temperature spikes quite rapidly,
okay.
something like that. So we haven't needed that, but the SNA is actually in the class, but that's not just for this child, it's for others as well.
Yeah, okay.
So the school have everything covered, yeah, everything covered.
But you're saying phenomenal, that an alternative system that didn't employ a phone, especially if you sort of want, you don't, where you'd prefer if the phone wasn't in the school setup.
I would prefer 100%. Yeah, and you I say, just think they're toxic.
Just because something's easy no. doesn't make it better.
Doesn't mean, just because something is the easiest way, it does not mean that it's the best way, or sometimes just, you know, persevering and looking for something else is the best way. Sure, if we did everything that's easy in life, we'd never get anywhere.
We actually wouldn't, and we'd lose the ability to do anything as well. Things would be so easy.
It would be robotic.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it, as a parent with managing the mobile devices and access
to it. It's tough. Yeah, you know yourself with your boys. Obviously, they're at the other end of the teens and the early 20s. But and obviously, you have a toddler, you have it all to come again.
Oh,
you
know, I have two teenage girls. No, I'm only joking.
Yeah. Don Buck has nothing to learn. But look, you know all about it, what it's like. It's tough for kids and how cruel they can be to each other on phones. So anything that we can do to roll back in it is well worth doing.
Yeah, for sure. I just wonder if it's so advanced now that really there's going to be, this sounds like space stuff, but there's just going to be actually a further level of integration, however that might come, I don't know. But I just don't think this is a tide that can be turned back. But anyway, Sinead.
Yeah, that would be my fear. But look, I suppose it comes down to parent boundaries. You just have to set them for your children. I have limits on what they're allowed on their phone. I take them off them if they step out of line, because that's just, they have to understand there are boundaries. I don't allow them anywhere near dinner tables, stuff like that. Not that I'm perfect. Listen, we're all winging it.
How do you get them near the dinner table? That's a good question, let alone not on the phone.
I grew up like the Waltons that always sat around the dinner table, come hell or high water, no matter what. And I just think it's a lovely tradition, and it should be sacrosanct, and that's it, you know.
Okay. Listen, Sinead, lovely to chat to you. Take care of yourself. Okay. 086 60 25000. A caller says, it really is time character references. That was the phrase I was looking for. It really is time character references for people were done away with. Any family person with the right money can get these references, yet the poorer people have to face their crime and are treated as they should be. Yeah, interesting. If you're a drug dealer, you are an evil person and no one should give you a character reference. I presume the case you're referring to is a drug dealer. These people are a scourge on our young people and society. They deserve no leniency. Some drivers leave 2 to 3 car lengths in front of them in traffic in this town, lengthening traffic jams. That comes in from Daniel. Dear Greg, the traffic coming in Leck and Lismonahan into the Old Town area is absolutely shocking this last few weeks. The bridge cannot tolerate the traffic and wait. That bridge is so old. Indeed, we talked about that in a different form on a previous show. Wasn't there a similar approach made to a young schoolboy in Strabane yesterday? The driver also in a Jeep, from what I can remember. Yes, indeed. And I didn't at that time want to link those for fear that I could be suggesting there's a link when maybe there isn't a link. But yes, there was a Jeep. I didn't get an age profile of the person in Letterkenny, and that Jeep was black. This other Jeep, a different colour. Right, okay, where am I? More, so many on traffic, so many on so many different issues. Thank you so much for it. I'd say we're over 1,000 texts so far this morning. Yeah, it's 2 lanes, then 3. 1 for going out past the council office, 2 for going up Port Road, and 3rd for past the Mount Airgirl. Thank you. I use it every day. I'm always in the right lane. But, you know, it's like if you, just a wee test for you, if you're wearing a watch, okay, this isn't a similar thing. If you're wearing a watch, okay, put your hand over your watch. Don't look at your watch now. Put your hand, now, if it's an analog watch, right, put your hand over the watch. Do not look at the watch before you put your hand on. No cheating. Right, now tell me, is it numbers or Roman numerals on your watch? Is it numbers or Roman numerals? Now, you look at your watch 10 times a day. Now, take your hand off your watch and have a look at your watch. Were you right? Were you sure? Remember, you look at it every single day. I got mine wrong. So, if you haven't done it yet, don't look at your watch. Put your hand over it and tell me, guess, is it numbers or Roman numerals the whole way around? Or is it just numbers at 3, 6, 9 and 12? Or maybe there's no numbers at all. Now look at your watch. Were you right? Let me know. 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call in 074 91 25000. All right, Europe Direct Letterkenny Soapbox public speaking competition takes place this evening. This year's theme is focusing on the importance of voting and the fact that every vote counts. It's very important that each of us exercise our democratic right, some feel, when it comes to elections, regardless of our views of or political persuasion. Fine Gael MEP Maria Walsh is back on the show with us again. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I am doing good. I think, you know, a lot of people in terms of voting, Maria, I often look at who doesn't vote, because I think those are the people that are often feel disenfranchised, disinterested, disillusioned. And if they were motivated to vote, whether it be in Ireland, Britain, anywhere in Europe, politics could be completely different if we could sort of shift that apathy or disinterest or disillusionment. That it's a massive group of people that could have a real big say in things.
Absolutely. And I agree with you, because when you look at the voter turnout in 2019 European elections, just under 50%. And for Midlands Northwest, which is Galway to Donegal, Mayo across to Louth, when you look at the Europeans, we were over the average in comparison to other constituencies, but we are still down. We're just over the 50% mark. So it's a long way from where I believe we should be at. And I take your point that how do we connect those that feel disconnected, frustrated, or angered? And for me, it's through conversations like we're going to have this evening in the Europe Direct Library in Letterkenny around Soapbox Awards, talking about voter turnout and what democracy means. And it's also showing to large and small community engagements, having town halls, regularly in contact, talking about, from my perspective, the European elections, and a lot of local and national politicians would do the same right across the political sphere. I think you know, that connect, that disconnect is so, so important, particularly where you look at the world, where it is now, and ultimately where it has grown from.
Yeah, and it's connecting those people. And sometimes I think it's about people feeling that politics is working for them. They might not always like how it works, but that it is working for them. And often it is. So sometimes it's the perception that it's not, and sometimes obviously it's a reality. And the reason I say that is a lot of people don't get what Europe is voting people in, the impact it has on them. And I think that's reflected in the turnout. More people sort of get what the council does, and I think that's also reflected in the turnout, but it still leaves that big space of people that don't vote because they don't feel it does anything for them.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of layers of where we can, I believe we can connect that disconnect. So when you look at what we're doing tonight in the Europe Direct Library in Letterkenny, so what we do know from right across the European Union, both at local, national and European level, we know that voter turnout among young people is often lower at your traditional politics elections, if you don't mind me saying. So referendums, very different. You know, Ireland experienced marriage equality in 2015, repeal the eighth in 2018, and we saw waves of people coming from overseas, making sure they were showing up to the ballot. And local and European, because they're done on the same day, we'll have that. We should have the elections on June 7th of next year. You know, it's incredibly important that we see that same enthusiasm. But to your point, people also have to see that they are seen, that they're heard, and that they're valued, and that to the topic of tonight, there's no such thing as a vote that doesn't matter. And President Barack Obama shared that before the last, I think it was the 2016 USA elections. And that is so incredibly important. And I think through politics and society in secondary schools, through events like tonight, through social media, when we're trying to educate and not polarize, I think plays its part too. And that people, while they understand, and I'm always first to say, equality is so hard fought and very quickly lost, and the system of politics is sometimes frustratingly really slow. And as someone who's been in it 4 years, I'm like, the first day of school, I'm going to change this, and it's going to change tomorrow. And I quickly realize consensus, negotiation, compromise does take time. But ultimately, that's where we need to find a space that we can have honest conversations, debate, and then move with each other versus polarizing to moving apart that we see in many different other democratic or non-democratic.
And listen, you know, I think young people, certainly the next general election in this country, I think young people are going to decide it. And I think the parties that do the hardest work to appeal to the younger people and sort of get across that they represent them are going to be the most successful. That's the power of the youth vote. Just more young people need to realise that.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. I just came from an event in Dublin City Centre called The Big Idea. And it was working with six classes from different schools across the country that were looking at climate crisis, mental health, hidden poverty and democracy, and we're debating, discussing and creating different solutions to worldwide problems. And when you have that that enthusiasm, then that enthusiasm also needs to get met by political parties like my own Fine Gael. And I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think the next elections, both at local, European and general, are really, really fundamental in terms of where we go as a country, the most west periphery in the European Union, and ultimately that we're both, all of us are working towards a fairer society, and that we're working together on that,
mm-hmm.
Regardless of you know, what I think you see foreign policy and geopolitics at play here. So we need to make sure that people do feel like they're seen and heard, and ultimately that's why we need to get more people putting their hands up and getting involved, be it as a candidate or as a campaign manager, or just involved in mm-hmm. knocking on doors and getting people to show up and make their voice heard and vote count.
Right, you're in Letterkenny this evening for the Europe Direct Letterkenny Soapbox Public Speaking Competition. A strong amount of people taking part in it. It's going to be really, really interesting. Talk to us a little bit more about tonight.
Yeah, so we have two categories, over 17 and under 17. They'll each have 3 minutes to propose their topic, and the theme is there's no such thing as a vote that doesn't matter. Again, President Obama shared that a couple of years ago before the 2016 presidential. Mm-hmm. And in today's turbulent times, it's so important than ever to build a better future by voting in the European elections. And again, in prep of the European elections next June 2024. And we'll hear from people, we'll hear the different arguments, pro and against. And I think it would leave folks like yourself, who's on the judging panel, really, really hard to decide who wins in both of those categories, over 17 and under 17. So
yeah, I'm really
my question to you,
it.
Mr. Hughes,
yes.
is, are you going to be the Simon Cowell, or are you going to be a nice judge? That's the biggest question I have for you.
More of a David Walliams, if the truth be told. But Maria, I'm just looking forward to it. I have so much admiration for our young people. I love to speak to them and not about them. And I'm really looking forward to this evening. And we'll see you later, Maria. And thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
All right, take care of yourself. All right, Maria Walsh there, Fine Gael MEP. That event tonight, the Soapbox Public Speaking Competition. Right, and I'm on one of the judging panel. It's just something I was asked to, and I thought, you know what, I want to go and listen to what young people have to say. So I said yes. Parish priests don't even know people they give reference for. One judge directed if a parish priest wished to give reference, it would be necessary for a priest to come in to open court and make their case. I thought this put an end to priests issuing references from the secrecy of their offices. Back to phones in the classroom. My son was allowed to go on his phone in class when he finished his work. That's not unusual. It's something I've heard about under my roof as well. Bronia, my child actually has to use her phone in class to do work in that class at school. It's an app. They had to download it. There you go. So it's not necessarily the young one saying, I'm sneaking my phone in. The phones are in there for a reason. Thanks for that. Bronia is. It's a lovely name. It's not something I've seen before that I can remember. I understand that teachers nowadays have their class notes and lesson plans on the laptops, phones, but I believe it's better for children to use their books in class and only use their phones when it's part of the classwork. But lots of schools have the tablet, or they have the Chromebooks that are in the classroom that are restricted in what young people can do on them and what have you. So we're not looking, I don't think, about removing technology, but bringing in your own technology that has your Snapchat, your TikTok and all signed into. That's different, isn't it? And on it goes. Have to take another break, then the weather, and we are joined by I guess on the line after these. Right, people incredibly exercised about traffic, particularly around Letterkenny. And let me say one more time, I'm sorry if you're down the county or across in the west or up in Inishowen and this feels irrelevant to you. But there's, as I say, 30-odd thousand cars travel into and through Letterkenny on a daily basis. So it's really a big story for the county when people are experiencing, you know, long delays at times. Like, you think about it. say, for instance, you know, 10,000 cars coming in the Remelton Road are delayed an hour, you know, you multiply that, 30,000 hours divided by days, that's a lot of lost time across the county, isn't it? Right, okay. Mary T. Sweeney is an A2 rep in Donegal and local election candidate. You're standing in the council or the general election, Mary T.? Sorry, just to, so I don't introduce
well,
you
incorrectly. Well, let's just start with the council. We'll start with the council, Greg. Thank you very much.
And we'll rule nothing in or out, says the man. Okay. Your take on the situation and dealing with congestion. Obviously, the long-term plan, Mary T's, and we heard from Damien earlier on, they want it, we want it, is the bridge, the famous bridge, and other measures. But I suppose we can only really talk for now in the short to medium term. What say you?
The thing that really struck me listening into the show this morning is that obviously everything is dependent on this bridge, which is now going to cost maybe somewhere in the region of maybe 20 to 30% more than it would have cost if they'd have got the bridge built initially. 15, 20 years ago when they started talking about it. What I think is, from listening to the show, is we should look for the sitting councillors that negotiate with the big companies, that they could negotiate for a flexi hour with the schools and the large employers. The flexi hours for the schools, I was very fortunate. One of my kids went to St. Columbus and they offered an excellent breakfast club where they could go in early from 8 o'clock in the morning and there was a tea and coffee and toast facility there available, which took the pressure off parents and off the kids. Not just the kids. The kids doing exams and stress and people getting to work, it really sets you up. If you're late for work, it's really stressful. And I think everybody's undergoing enough stress at the moment that we need to get our elected representatives that have the contacts with the Optums and the hospitals and the ATU and all the regional schools. When I looked at the Donegal, the Letterkenny Town Plan, I was putting in a submission there, maybe a month or 2 months ago. And one of the things I looked at, I asked the engineers at the open day, what have you done in relation to a feasibility study on the traffic flow around Letterkenny? And the new town plan, they said they were relying on old data. Now, they did take note of it seriously when I mentioned it to them, because I was quite concerned because of the high impact of traffic coming in over the Ram Road here and over to the Smonaghan, all impeding on the Old Town Bridge to try and get into town. So that's the first thing we need to start with. We need to start with a traffic management plan to look to see what traffic is coming from where and, more importantly, going where. Because if we then can get the flexi hour in the places like the hospital that staff can start that have kids to drop off an hour earlier, that they're not going to lose an hour's pay, you know. There are ways around this and the people are brilliant out there that have ideas. Great ideas, and they should be invited. The council, I would encourage the council to invite those ideas in, and maybe, you know, something constructive. Because in the meantime, the stress on families and on the young ones going to school, especially if they're in exam years, you know, or the ATE students.
But who's going to take the first step in that, though? But that being said, you know, I'm sure there are businesses that are, their staff are turning up half an hour late on a daily, and maybe if they shifted the working day a little bit, it might accommodate the staff and get more productivity.
Well, that's what I'm calling it, a town flexi hour. That if we had that flexi hour that give people the grace that they could notify their employer and say, listen, this morning it's a particularly bad day in traffic on a Monday morning, then, you know, like, try and negotiate with the staff. And again, it's easier for teachers because they have what they call built-in flexi hours that they have to do additional teaching hours that can either be done at home or in school, or at least when I worked as a teacher, that's the way it worked. So the principal could negotiate that there's a few teachers in place to supervise in the breakfast club, which is what happens in other schools that I know of. And it's a win-win situation. It would take off the pressure just by getting somebody focused to sit and negotiate that, you know.
Yeah, that report you're talking about, I think it's the Lills report from 2009. I'm not sure if that's the one that was being referenced.
For the traffic management.
Yeah.
It was quite old to be doing a new town plan, and I was quite alarmed by that. So I'd asked them for a new town traffic flow management, you know.
I think that was back in 2009. I just can't see the total cars it predicted, because we heard a figure earlier, 30,000, and it'd be interesting if that corresponded with that 2009 report. I'm going to check that in off air. All right.
I had pulled figures together for my submission, which was done, as you know, like when you're doing it on your own bat on your own time, it's all, there's that much to be done. But I remember seeing the traffic. If you look at the employee status for the hospital, for Optum and for the ATU, which was surprisingly high. And the other most visual impact is to look at the physical size of the car parks. Follow the cars, see where the car parks are, and you know they're the biggest, get the six biggest key, you know, car parks in the morning, and they're the six businesses or schools to start with.
Yeah, indeed. No, car parks weren't built for the SUVs that are on the road at the moment. They're very narrow, but that's a completely different subject. Mary T, thank you very much indeed. I appreciate that. Mary T Sweeney, AIM2 rep there, council election candidate as well. Yeah, I think when they were being lined out, the traffic, a lot of the car parks were for, you know, saloon cars. SUVs everywhere now, and I just don't think they're wide enough. Is there many people listening that park regularly that haven't come back to a dint or a scrape on their car or the door? I don't know. Listen, such was the nature of today. We always enjoy huge reaction and we really appreciate that. But today was something else. Loads and loads of you texting in, and we'll get to them tomorrow. We have a great Friday panel lined up for you tomorrow. So we're going to discuss the big issues of the week and the day between 9 and 10. Then we have That's Entertainment between 10 and 11 and 12. What's on between 10 and 11 tomorrow, Caroline? Is there anything particularly on? Just usual good stuff. Just the usual good stuff. Right, nothing too heavy between 10 and 11. Can we? No, just Friday. We'll see how it goes. Okay. Listen, thanks very much. Stay tuned. Oh, ghost stories. Get your ghost stories into us. That's what it's Halloween on Tuesday, isn't it? Get your ghost stories into us. Oh, wait, there's some great ghost stories from around the place, down around Lahey, up around Downings. Any good ghost stories, please email them in to comments@highlandradio.com. I'll put something up on social media too to try and remind. I would love to hear ghost stories. It's Halloween. Please get them into us. And I can fill 10 to 11 tomorrow with ghosts. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9.